Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on the internet at natelindberg.com to see all the things that I do for the Torch, as well as the other things that I do in my spare time when I'm not doing things for the Torch or working or sleeping, you know, things like that. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about NXT. And for November 14th, 2023. I can't believe it's November already, but we're here. Here we are. Here to talk with me is only one person because Kelly literally just bailed on us 30 seconds ago. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me at B_253. I wouldn't say Kelly bailed on us. He had things that suddenly came up and had to do. That's his life, right? So,
Yeah, but you know, I like to rag on Kelly, so you know, I need to make it sound worse than it was.
And you wonder why he always rags on you. Well,
it's a give and take, man. It's a give and take.
Yeah. So yeah, my report is not up today because Kelly did the report, but you'll find my report for next week, which has two title matches.
Yes. Two title matches. And also, last night I did do the post-show after Raw with Wade, so if you haven't checked that out, feel free to do so. And we actually had some really kind of cool conversation, and we even kind of got into the Who is Seth Rollins talk again, which towards the end of the show, which I thought was kind of interesting. So, but anyway, we had a main event here tonight. Our main event was Wes Lee versus Baron Corbin. 10 minutes, 27 seconds here with Baron Corbin going over. This was a fun match for Wesley's first match back from his little hiatus after taking, I guess I'll call it a mental break from NXT. Months ago, I forget exactly how long ago. It seems like at least months ago at this point, he kind of walked out after a loss. And yes, I'm done. And we hadn't seen him since. Came back a few weeks ago, and first match actually back in the ring. They kept talking about ring rust and things on commentary. Of course, that was nothing necessarily there tonight. I thought Wesley had a perfectly good performance here against Baron Corbin. Let me throw it over to you, Bruce, and get your take on it and go from there.
Yeah, I thought this was a perfectly fine TV main event. They worked the big man, small man match very well. I was really looking forward to the ending of this match because the whole match was going fun, and I was thinking, oh, we might get a nice clean finish here. No, Dom had to come in, cause interference, that led to the end of days there. But, okay, they're furthering that storyline between Dom and Wesley, and also after the match, the storyline between Baron Corbin and Ilya Dragunov for the Men's NXT Championship. And so the match itself, again, a good match. Lots of good action back and forth, good counters, good striking. The end of the match, you have the interference, you have the end of days, then the post-match. I thought it was pretty nice how Corbin was able to counter the Torpedo Moscow into the end of days just pretty smoothly there without no hitch or anything. And that's the thing with Corbin. You're not going to get your workhorse classics, but he's going to do all the basic stuff right. And all those little things right. And right now, that's kind of what you need in NXT. And I don't think he's going to win. I would be very surprised if he did. But it's a nice little gap between what Ilya Dragunov does after the fact, whether that's, it's got to be the winner of the Iron Survivor Challenge, which they kind of confirmed tonight. But who that ends up being, and hopefully it's someone like Trick Williams, that this is a nice little measure or a little stopgap between now and then to make sure that Dragunov is on the card and that you get the most out of Corbin. So to me, all in all, aside from the ending of the match in terms of the interference at the end by Dominik Mysterio, I thought this was a fine way to end the show.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And, I'm not I mean, I would have liked to see maybe Wesley get a clean, you know, get a win here, or Baron Corbin get a clean win over Wesley or something, you know, without the interference. So I'm okay with it. It does, where it does further the storyline, and it continues to get heat on Dom. Like, it is what it is. But I would have preferred a different sort of finish. But yeah, otherwise, you know, I thought it was a great match. Perfectly good, like I said, main event, and good way to reintroduce Wesley. I think he came back a little bit re-energized, and it wasn't just because I was watching on 1.25 speed and he seemed a little bit faster than normal. Because I did something dumb today, guys. I actually sat down to watch NXT, and I was a half hour into it going, I've seen this, and I was watching last week's episode. I had to like kind of scramble through. Well, I wouldn't say scramble through, but yeah, 1.25 speed, made it to the end. It was good. We're all on time. All right. So let's let me actually look. We don't have anybody in the caller queue at the moment. Got a couple people listening, but don't have anybody that actually wants to be part of the conversation. So if you do want to be part of the conversation, you can always call in. We go live approximately a half an hour or so after NXT gets off the air. You can call in 515-605-9345. Press 1 on the keypad, and that'll flag me and let me know that you want to be part of the show. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Yeah, that's right. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I said it perfectly, and I still question myself. I always do with that email address. You can send an email in to us and be part of the show that way, just like Kevin Catani did tonight. Kevin says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I'm not sure if it was just me, but this episode seemed heavy in non-wrestling segments. They were entertaining, but there just seemed to be a lot of them. That said, the only joke that really stuck out to me was when Braun made a retribution joke to Dijak. That's some good stuff right there. You know, I'll talk about it, I guess, while we're here. I like that. I'm not a big fan of Braun Breaker on the mic, but like that little dig at retribution, like, for those who know, and you know, for those who might be new to NXT, I mean, it just kind of seemed like a good line, but I definitely like that line. I'm hoping they throw a little bit more wit into Braun Breaker's promos and things like that going forward. He also says, what do you all make of the Dom Baron alliance? Is this a pathway for Baron to head back to the main roster, or is this a way to help keep Dom in NXT storylines? Or none of the above, I suppose. Lastly, distraction finish notwithstanding, what do you make of of how they're using Lash Legend? It seems like she's getting a renewed push for a while, but now she feels like a bit of a support player for Noam Dar. Are they going to let her stand on her own 2 feet soon, or is this her role for the foreseeable future? Thanks, as always, go VIP and listen to 8YB. Our office hours are now over. Kevin Catani, PH, the professor. I forgot to say Professor Kevin Catani, PhD. I like to get that in there. So I feel like I've just been talking. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Bruce, to touch on the email, and I'll go after that.
All right. Excuse me. I'll touch on the last question part first, because I might have got the person wrong or the people wrong, but I called Lash Legend winning this match in our chat by interference. So I'm not sure if I don't know if she was getting a renewed push for a while. They're just trying to get her some more experience for a bit, because I don't remember her winning too much. But the person who seems the most as a support character metaphor is Dakara Jackson. That's just because you don't really see her in the ring right now, even though she's out there. She looks great. She looks to be in shape. She looks to be ready. But rumor was that there was an injury that kept her out of the tournament, or why they had the angle to take her out of the tournament. But regardless, I think, and I said it last week too, when I brought up Lash Legend might be someone they put in this match, because they didn't really have, in the men's match too last year, they didn't really have a bigger wrestler, a taller wrestler. So you had Dijak on the men's side, and here you get Lash Legend. And I completely forgot about the Kiana James, Roxanne Perez issue, because the match last week was Roxanne Perez and Kalani Jordan versus Bison and Perez and Electra Perez, Lola Bison and Electra Perez,
Lopez.
Gosh, all these names. And I thought Bison and Lopez were going to be the ones to interfere because of that, but they're more intertwined with Kalani Jordan because of the breakout tournament, which makes a lot of sense. So I think she's going to be in there. And this could be like it was for Kiana James last year. This could be the Iron Survivor Challenge. Could be the time where Lash Legend actually breaks out, shows people that she has more, or she starts to live up to that potential that a lot of people saw in her. And, you know, she's a former collegiate basketball player, being professional too. I need to check on that. But so we know that she has the athletic talent, and it's just a matter of putting it together in terms of the pro wrestling side. So I think in terms of where she is right now, it's good because we've been saying this the whole time Metaphor's been out. She's getting on TV. She's getting reps in terms of the character development, the mic stuff. And I assume that they've been doing some work at the PC. So now we're getting the chance to see her again. When it comes to Dominic and Baron Corbin, I think it was just a way to advance the storylines between the four men that were involved in the main event and the main event angle. Nothing really more to that. And then when he gets to the presentation, this is something I wanted to actually bring up tonight, because to me, this is sort of, there were several segments tonight where NXT really tried to present it in a very sports-like manner. You know, the Iron Survivor Challenge explainer, it really reminds me a bit of how they did the NBA in-season tournament explainers and things like that. It was a very, you know, something you might see on a pregame show or on SportsCenter or on NFL Live, something like that. And then you had the Chase U stuff, which, you know, the little gaggle of reporters at the end of the parking lot and getting driven away, more about kind of like a little post-game scrum mixed with TMZ there. There were a couple of things throughout the show like that tonight where it seemed like they were trying to start out the line of really being sports entertainment in a more relatable fashion. And I think it's a little bit interesting because this is what we are wanting from AEW. And not to say that I think the only one that really succeeded tonight was the explainer video for the Iron Survivor Challenge, but at least NXT is attempting it here. And again, most of them didn't hit, but they're trying, and I do like the attempt. And little things I think they could do to straddle the barrier between what you see in pro sports and what we see in pro wrestling. Things like the post-match interviews inside the ring, right, where they're still huffing and puffing and breathing, like you see when they're heading to the locker room for a halftime or after the game ends. Little things like that I think they could do, instead of trying to do more of the outlandish things like the gaggle of reporters having a scandal. You know, my friend at Daily DDT tweeted that they called him Andre Harbaugh Chase because of the whole thing with Jim Harbaugh right now at the University of Michigan. So I think stay away from those things and focus more on the game-to-game, match-to-match stuff that they do in professional sports. That's what you should focus on in terms of bringing it over to the show.
All right, let's go back here. So, yeah, kind of going back through his email, the Don Baron, he's asking what we make of the Don Baron Alliance path for Baron to head back to main roster, keep Dom in NXT. I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I think Baron Corbin's probably going to be in NXT, I don't want to say at least for the foreseeable future. I mean, I don't think it's going to be much past like Stand and Deliver or anything like that. But you know, I kind of feel like he's probably like in that Apollo Crews spot right now where, you know, that veteran that kind of just hung out in NXT for a little while. So I think that's kind of where he's at. Dom, I figured Dom would be gone from NXT by this point. I really was not expecting him to win the NXT title, North American title back from Trick Williams. I really figured that was going to be his swan song with NXT. So for me, I'm not sure when we're going to see Dom kind of get up to the main roster and or get back up to the main roster full time. Well, I guess he's still full time. He's still showing up on every single show, but you know, at least kind of get him out of NXT storylines. But you know, again, I'm kind of thinking maybe the Stand and Deliver time frame, where we only are about 4 months away from there. I think a lot of things are going to wind up either culminating there. Probably there, because I think we really only have Deadline and then Stand and Deliver. They may have a couple, you know, of those like PLE light shows that are on like Wednesday or something like that. But
real quickly, I'll add that one of the reasons I think he's going to stay in NXT longer is that backstage segment with him and Corbin. Mysterio is not good in his acting, and he needs to, not just his in-ring needs to be shored up, but those character and mic things when he's not in the ring or in a segment with Judgment Day needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because like there was something I noticed even last night on Raw. There was a segment where all of Judgment Day were in a locker room. Rhea was talking to somebody that wasn't part of Judgment Day, or maybe it was Priest. I think she was talking to Priest. Regardless, Dominic's in the background, and he's trying to look, you know, like kind of tough and whatever, but like he's very clearly kind of corpsing. And I mean, yeah, it happens in all of that, but it's not the first time I've noticed, you know, him kind of like not being able to hold it together or at least wipe the smile off of his face, you know? So, you know, hey, I'm glad he's having fun. Like, you know, everybody wants to have fun at work, but, you know, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, at least from my perspective anyway. Lash Legend. Yeah. I think you kind of touched on that, pretty well. I don't really have a whole lot to add from that, but from what you said there, but I really like the way Lash Legend has progressed. She's still far cry away from being, you know, the one of the most polished women in an NXT ring, but compared to where she was, you know, when she first started, in the ring, I think she's vastly improved. The character work right now, because, you know, what Kevin was saying is, you know, she was kind of getting a bit of like a push on her own. And now, you know, it kind of feels like she's just a support role for Noam Dar. I think she's in a better spot now than she was then. The Metaphor stable is going to be around for a little while. It seems like they're putting quite a bit into it, and I don't think it's going to be just a flash in the pan stable. I don't think it's necessarily going to make its way to the main roster or anything like that, but I could certainly see, you know, Metaphor sticking around in NXT for a year or so. And if that's the case, she has a lot of charisma. She really stands out in a lot of those segments, even if she's not necessarily doing the talking. It's just her body language and just kind of the way she's acting and things. So I think she's at a, you know, she's got a pretty good direction for her right now. I would kind of like, yeah, I let's look back at Rhea Ripley. I mean, Rhea, she certainly hit her stride, as a singles. I mean, she NXT champion Raw champion. I believe she was the Raw Women's Champion, not SmackDown Women's Champion. But as soon as she kind of, you know, became part of a stable, Judgment Day, yeah, they had a bit of a rocky start, but I mean, look at her now, you know? So, it's a good formula, I think, to propel some of the, kind of some people that haven't had a spotlight on them, or at least for a long period of time, and you kind of get some shine on them and just have some fun with other characters. So it's easier to play off of people, especially having fun and, you know, kind of get along and that kind of, I don't know. I mean, I don't know for sure. I know like Judgment Day for sure really gets along behind the scenes. But from just the chemistry, from what I see with Metaphor, I kind of feel like it's a similar thing there. So I like what they're doing with it. And I think it's going to, long term, I think it's actually going to help Lash Legend the longer she's in Metaphor, as long as it doesn't start to take a nosedive and you know, go downhill. But if you kind of keep on this direction, I think it'll help her long term. All right. I talked about that a little longer than I expected to. Anything else on the email, or shall we move on? Let's move on. All right. Let's check the phone lines. All right. Still gets people listening, but nobody wants to talk to us tonight, so that's fine. So let's just kind of work back through the card here. Go to Gigi Dolin versus Ariana Grace, 3 minutes, 43 seconds. This kind of stemmed from a little bit of a backstage altercation earlier in the night, as a lot of wrestling matches do these days. I don't know. So first off, I'll be honest. I was kind of half paying attention to this match because I didn't think I was going to be hosting tonight. I also am on call for work this week. So I was kind of doing a couple things for work in the background. So I'm going to rely on you a little bit more for this one, but I'll throw to you for Gigi Dolin and Ariana Grace.
Quick match. It was probably, we haven't been too high on Gigi Dolin's in-ring work, but I would say this was a perfectly passable match tonight that she had with Ariana Grace, which is interesting because Grace has less experience than some of the people that Dolin has been in there with, who she hasn't had as great matches with. So I thought it was a perfectly fine match. I thought that I would have had Grace go over just because her character right now is she's connecting more with the crowd. Do understand that she's someone who can take a loss and it not affect her moving forward because of the character she has. The issue, though, is, and we've been talking about it for months now, is what is your plan with Gigi Dolin? Who is she actually feuding with? This seems to be a one-off thing. And what is her stated goal? There's really nothing there for me to latch onto. So I'm really just wondering. You could have had Grace use this win, be even more smarmy in her promos and in her segments, and use that as even more of a jumping off point to, she's not in the Iron Survivor Challenge because she lost a qualifying match, but it could also give her a pass to get to Stand and Deliver in about 4 months. So a little questionable here, but the match itself was fine. The backstage segment before that to set it up was fine as well. I thought it was really fun when Ariana Grace, after Dolin said she's going to beat her in the ring, just goes, why is everything always end up in a fight? And just started laughing from that.
I thought that was actually a really good line.
Yeah, it was probably the line of the night. Ariana Grace, this character stuff is, she has no issues with that. I just need to see more of her in the ring because we haven't seen her in matches longer than pretty much what we saw tonight.
Yeah.
And she's coming off the injury as well. So I just want to see, if their confidence is there, how she does in longer matches and if she's ready for, maybe they didn't think she was ready for something like the Iron Survivor Challenge because of the physical rigors and the time into that match. But I think there's a high future for her. And again, I'm just questioning the booking decision here and having Dolin go over. And this was a clean one too. So, just a bit interesting.
Yeah. I definitely I saw the finish at least, I saw bits and pieces throughout the match. I've got two monitors, so I was working on one and kind of watching on the other, I agree. I think this is what you said earlier. Gigi can take a loss because of the character that she has, correct?
But Ariana Grace.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair. You can make the argument for both too, but
Dolin needs as many victories as she needs right now. They're really going to make her try and do something with her.
No, and I agree. I mean, it's one of those where. I feel like if she can take a loss and she can kind of, loss here and there anyway, and kind of talk her way out of it or, kind of ignore it or whatever. I agree. I mean, if they want to do something with Gigi Dolin, they really need to, I don't even know, because the few times that they've tried to do something with her,
they need to focus.
Yeah, they do. They need to focus. Her brother, that whole brother angle thing, he showed up for a week or two and then he didn't show up again, but then he was still heavily involved in the story. It was weird. They got to do something with her that's not terrible, I guess, for lack of a better term right now. Ariana Grace, I think you're on the right track. I mean, she's I do definitely want to see, you know, what she can do in the ring a little bit more than, you know, what we saw here tonight, you know, a couple other times. The character work, like, she really is, she's buying right into it. You know, it's like what I talked about, like, with Thea Hale and things, you know, back when Thea Hale was kind of that over the top, you know, character. She's really buying into that. It's believable. And I think people might get behind it. I don't know what the ceiling is on it, though. You know, I can't see that type of a character. I mean, I guess I could see that type of a character holding the title. I don't know if that's her ceiling, or it's going to be lower than that. But you know, I like
Academy is basically the ceiling of this character.
But yeah, I think that's probably a good bar. But I guess it could potentially evolve too and become a little bit more of a, of an in-depth character, but you'll see as time goes. But for right now, it is a little one-dimensional, so I'm a little nervous about that, but she's at least pulling it off. So yeah, kind of go there. We'll keep going with matches, then we'll go to segments. We'll go back to the Brawling Brutes versus Out the Mud, 5 minutes and 50 seconds. Saw the Brawling Brutes go over here, but Out the Mud had a really strong showing. It was like midway to the match. I think it was a little bit more towards the beginning of the match. But, like, you know, the Brawling Brutes, go to do the, what's Seamus? Thank you. Beats the Bodron. I could not think of the name of that. And, you know, both of them, both members of the Mud just kind of overpowered them and were able to kind of at least throw one of them out the ring. But, it's not something that you usually see people do. They usually wind up getting that move in. Butch and Ridge Holland, I mean, they are some imposing figures. I mean, they haven't been, you know, necessarily super, like, protected, I guess, on the main roster or whatever. But still, I think this was a good showing for Out the Mud here tonight. And I think I would have rather have seen Out the Mud get the win here. But I can make the case for Brawling Brutes going over. I mean, you know, they're the main roster tag team and if they're going to be going back to the main roster and, you know, continuing to do matches there, you know, what does it say if they lost to an undercard team, in NXT? So it makes sense. But with the way they've been kind of presenting Out the Mud, it hasn't been like, you know, over the top promotion and you know, we think that they're going to be the next NXT champions or tag team champions or anything like that. But they've kind of been pushing them as like, a monster tag team, you know, that's going to do some damage. So it would have almost been nice to maybe see them put the Brawling Brutes away so they could say they had that feather in the cap, you know? So I don't know, I could kind of make the case for either one here, but, long story short, I really like Lucian Price and Bronco Nima. I really like what the two of them are doing here with this character. I really like Scripps as well. I think he was like that icing to the cake, you know, that kind of finished it. This is a good look, and this is a good spot for him. Partially because he's getting into the character and kind of talking about, you know, the mean streets and the way he grew up and whatnot. I have no idea what his background actually is. So I have no idea if he's, you know, if this is a legit character and that's actually his background or if he's just talking out his ass. I have no idea. But for me anyway, like, I still think of Scripps as Reggie being kind of like that, you know, I don't know, the dude running around chasing the 24/7 title. So for me, it's kind of like it's almost like a comedic role because, like, I kind of just see Reggie playing this hard character, but at the same time, I know that's not the way they're portraying it or the way it's supposed to be portrayed, rather, or perceived anyway. At least I don't think so. So, that all being said, I really like the presentation of Out the Mud, and I think you know, with a little bit more, you know, they're still a little green, but I think with some time and some polish, they're going to be a team we're going to be talking about quite a bit here on the show. Bruce.
Yeah, good tag team match, good showing for both teams. I said last week what I was looking for mostly was Bronco Nima's movement. Is he going to be too deliberate like he was last time, moving kind of slow, kind of like he was stuck in mud, part of the pun. But no, it looked good tonight, flowing. Both teams had good moments for each of them, and I think even in the loss, Out the Mud did take away something because they're so new. They definitely shouldn't win yet. I do think this feud isn't over, and eventually their plan is to give Out the Mud the victory. I don't know if that'll be at Deadline or if that'll be on NXT, but or on the TV show. But I thought both teams were good here. Reggie played his role well. The thing that when I saw Braun and Bruce come out, I just thought to myself, huh, how come those two look like a can of PBR? That aside, fun match.
Oh, my God, they did.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about it, but, yeah, you're right.
No, they definitely look like a can of PBR to me. And just so, that again, that aside, good match. Shows a lot of potential for Out the Mud. I did note that it was interesting that Nima, I believe, is the one who took the pin here, because I've been saying that to me, Lucy and Price has more potential between the two, and maybe that's what they're seeing as well. Maybe it's just a little, I'm just reading too much into it, just the pin. And then we were going to mix up with the names. If you're Booker T, he kept saying Bronco Lima tonight.
Yeah.
So a good tactic.
Thanks to Booker T doing that early in the night and me hearing Vic catching him, and I didn't make that mistake earlier. So, yeah, thanks, Book.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, cool. I thought you still had more to go. All right, so let's keep going on here. Trick Williams versus Joe Coffey for a spot in the Iron Survivor Challenge. This went 11 minutes and 53 seconds. We also had a little bit of a segment before this showing Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes being interviewed backstage and kind of talking about the elephant in the room. You know, are they together? Aren't they together? What's going on? You know, and they basically said they're on the same page. Bygones be bygones. Things happen. We're going to forget about it. Water under the bridge. That's kind of what they showed us here tonight in the match. We didn't really see, or at least I don't remember seeing any sort of issue between Trick and Carmelo Hayes. Trick Williams wound up going over. I kind of assumed that was going to be the case here with just kind of the way that Trick's story has been going. He lost the North American title so quickly after winning it, and that kind of being his that was kind of the whole story that he had going on with Carmelo. So it kind of seemed weird that he lost it, or at least so quickly. I think it was within a week.
It was his third day.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to say a couple days, and I was like, I'm going to say within a week, but just to be on the safe side. It kind of seemed a little weird that, he lost it so quickly. So I think putting him in a big match like this kind of is a bit of a make good, for lack of a better term right now, for the crowd to, kind of get back behind him and things like that, progress the storyline a bit more. And it's probably going to wind up putting him one step closer to the title, the actual NXT title, which I think will probably wind up progressing the feud, the not feud right now between himself and Carmelo Hayes. So, yeah, as you'd expect out of Trick Williams and Joe Coffey, I thought this was a great match, action-packed. And, let me throw it over to you.
So there was a moment during the match that I think you missed when I think Trick went to go knock, I don't know if it was Coffey, remember, Gallus off the ring, and Melo basically did the same thing from the outside, and that caused Trick to tumble over the top rope to the outside. So they played it as it could have been.
I totally didn't see that.
it could have been Melo doing that on purpose, or it could have just been Melo is trying to help, and in doing so, it caused Strick to fall out the ring. So that did happen during the match. I will note also that during the interview with Mackenzie Mitchell in the back before the match, Melo said that the lie detector came up and it proved that he wasn't the one. And then he said something about the lie detector was who did he beat last the wrestler? Some person about how they lost. And then if you think about the later in the show, I know we haven't gone over segments yet, but I'm just going to tie it in here because of the connection. Alexis King went into Baron Corbin's locker room, and Baron Corbin said, way to make a name for yourself, right out the gate, taking out someone like Trick. And King kind of had the demeanor of someone who's like, yeah, I totally did that, but is trying to play it off as, you know they didn't, they probably didn't do it, but they're trying to play it off as if they're the one because they're getting all the benefits of it, right? So I thought that was a nice little interaction as well, because we haven't really, King hasn't wowed us too much on the mic since he debuted, right? Aside from the vignettes beforehand. But in terms of the in-ring or the in-ring stuff or the stuff in the backstage, it didn't seem too good. Here I thought he did a nice job of trying to play off the fact that he wants people to think he did it, even if, you know, it ends up being Melo the one that did it. So I like how they integrated that little bit of it into this little story, even though Alexis King was only on TV for maybe about 30 seconds today.
Yeah, that's very true. It's very true. All right, let's go back here. So we had we already talked a little bit about Lash Legend tonight, but let's talk about her some more. Roxanne Perez versus Lash Legend, 5 minutes and 4 seconds. This was also for a spot in the Ice Survivor Challenge. Kiana James wound up, as Bruce mentioned earlier, Kiana James came out and helped Lash Legend win the match after Metaphor wound up getting themselves ejected from the match early on in the match. And then towards the finish, Chikara Jackson came back out. Referees obviously distracted by the member of Metaphor that was just ejected not 5 minutes ago. Actually, it wasn't even 5 minutes ago because the match is only 5 minutes. So not like 3 minutes ago. And here she is again. So as he's being distracted by her, Kiana James came out and from the crowd wound up holding Lash Legend in the corner and holding Roxanne Perez in the corner, allowing Lash Legend to pick up the win, furthering the feud between Roxanne Perez and Kiana James. I thought this was a pretty good match here. As I said earlier, Lash Legend, she's still looking, she's looking better and better in the ring. So don't want to keep harping on that. Already talked about it. I think it would have kind of been nice to see Roxanne Perez in the Iron Survivor Challenge, but she was in it last year and she was a winner last year, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm like, she was a winner. And then something in my brain went, no, she wasn't. I guess it kind of makes sense for them to let five other people in the match here. And obviously her being, in a feud already, kind of James kind of makes sense to kind of progress that singles feud. Even though I'm not the biggest fan of Roxanne Perez in the title scene, there is also part of me that would kind of like to see her get back up there just to kind of complete the story that she had about, with the title. She had to relinquish it, and she had a couple more chances at the title and things, but I feel like there's still a story that they can tell there, about her, kind of clawing her way back up to the top. And I feel like the longer they wait to tell that story, the less effective it'll be. Decent match. Don't know if I have much more to say on this, so let me throw it to you.
Only thing I'll add, and I'm glad you brought it up, is being kicked out and then coming back down to the ring and having no negative effect on the wrestler who they were associated with. Because this happened last night on Raw, too. I think it was Giovanni Vinci who got kicked out and came back. I think that was the match. But we're sticking them out. If they're just going to come back and they're not going to disqualify the wrestler immediately, right?
What's the consequence?
Exactly. And so aside, that part really did irk me. But again, I figured that this was the ending that was coming, interference leading to Lash Legend beating Roxanne Perez. And that's what we saw here. So I just think that Kelly and I debated this last week because he's someone who doesn't like, especially with heel characters, he doesn't want to have just clean finishes, where I'm just someone who says, I don't care if they're face or heel, just give me clean finishes and go from there. We kind of debated that last week, and tonight was one of those things. And I think it's even more egregious because of what happened on Raw last night as well. You can't just kick them out, have them come back two nights in a row and have no consequences whatsoever. So
exactly.
Little things like that, they can clean up and make a whole lot of difference to the show for the positive. But again, I figured this outcome was coming. Excited to see what Lash Legend can do. And Roxanne Perez right now is Tyler Bate. I keep bringing it up. They come in, they win or lose. It doesn't really matter to whatsoever to their booking. They're always going to be mid to upper card, usually hovering around the upper card. And right now that's fine because both of them are still in their early 20s. So whatever they do from here, it's really just polishing them up and getting them ready for Raw or SmackDown. If they do go there, I'm not sure about Bate. I'm pretty sure Perez will get there. But Bate is someone who I'm not sure if they're going to make the move. And if they do, I think they just want him to be as polished as possible for when that time does come. And I think that's what they're doing with Roxanne Perez. So not a surprise for me to see her not make the Iron Survivor Challenge this year.
Yeah. And, yeah, with Bate, I feel like unless they specifically shine a spotlight on him and push him like to the moon right away, man, he's going to get lost to shuffle on the main roster and it's going to suck. I hate saying it, but after watching DIY come out last night, absolutely no reaction. Like it's,
they need their old music. They need their NXT music back.
Thank you.
First one.
That was It was one of the first things I said last night on the post show was like DIY's new music absolutely sucks. Like it does not pump you up, doesn't get you excited. But like friggin' Crimson Heart, man, that did. And the fact that I know the name of the song should tell you that.
Well, they need old school Rebel Heart. They need that one too for all of it.
Yes.
And they need
the old Rebel Heart, not the new Rebel Heart.
Yeah, the old. And what was Ciampa's heel solo theme called? The
No
One,
no
will,
one
survive
will Survive
one? Yeah, that one. They need all that back.
The No One Will Survive. If when he becomes Blackheart again, I hope they bring that back. Because they brought it back for a little while. He had it for a bit.
And he got hurt.
Yeah, and then he got hurt, came back, and then now he's doing all the stuff with DIY, and it's not even. It's not even their old theme music. Anyway, I don't know how I started to talk about DIY. Tyler Bate. Oh, right. I was talking about Tyler Bate. After seeing DIY come out to like zero reaction last night and plenty of other times on Raw, but especially last night, like it I don't just maybe start thinking about like how just a slight presentation difference can make such a big impact on the way that the crowd perceives a couple wrestlers. I mean, in NXT, those guys were gods, and now it's like, man, I worry about that for Tyler Bate. Same with the Ilya Dragunov, some of the smaller guys. Like, I just feel like they're going to wind up getting lost in the shuffle. I'm a little less concerned with Paul Levesque in control up there now, and it's not Vince who wants big men slapping big man meat and all that, all right, let's keep moving on. We got one more match to talk about, and that was our opener here, Chase University versus the D'Angelo family. 13 minute, yep, is that what that's what, I think that's what Kelly has written there. 13 minutes and 53 seconds. It's either that or it's 15 minutes and 53 seconds, but I think it's a 13 minutes and 53 seconds. He took a picture of his written notes, so I'm trying to decipher his handwriting, which isn't that bad, to be completely honest, but wasn't sure there. Anyway, so Chase U, they're right now being rocked by this scandal on how they won the tag titles in the first place, and Chase. I think it was to open the show tonight. They actually showed like reporters coming up to Chase University. I think it was out in the parking lot, wanting to get a comment. And Chase looks all disheveled. You can see his white shirt untucked under his red sweater. So, you know, definitely taking its toll on Chase University, this whole scandal. So the opening match was, again, Chase U versus the D'Angelo family. We wound up seeing the D'Angelo family pick up the win and bring the titles back to La Familia here. There's part of me that, like, Chase U, okay, so Chase University is this outlandish, weird, over-the-top gimmick anyway, right? And, I mean, you know, complete with, like, Fia Hale and, you know, just all these other outlandish characters. I mean, hell, even just Andre Chase, for that matter. So it's not, like, completely out of the realm of the what's believable, I guess, for that particular faction to kind of be in this weird thing where they've got these reporters chasing them and there's this whole big scandal and, oh my God, like, it's kind of entertaining, but there's also this part of me that's going, but is it really? And I haven't felt
ESPN's any indication, all we keep talking about is the Michigan scandal right now. So
Yeah, all right. So I guess it must be. I mean, people love scandal. People love scandal.
People love hearing people talk about scandal.
That's true. That's very true. So, I'm a little 50-50 on all of the Chase University stuff tonight. I'm going to let it play out and see where this goes, you know, kind of next week and whatever. Cause like, I mean, is this the end for Chase U? Is Chase about to hang it up or, you know, pass the reins over to Duke? Or, yeah, I don't know. There's a few different ways they could go here. And so the reason I'm not, like, completely writing it off right now is because I'm invested in Chase University and the story and the characters. I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic, but I'm a little like, I don't know. I don't know about all of this. And then, like you said, you're going back to the family, considering how many tag teams there are in the men's division right now, I mean, I guess who else is really going to win the titles? Yeah, Out the Mud probably aren't quite ready for that yet. We had the Brawling Brutes on tonight. We've got the former Los Lotharios. It's just easier to say that than both of their names. I'm lazy. It's not that I can't say their names, but you know what I mean? So yeah. So I guess it kind of makes the most sense. Plus we did think that it was a little early for them to lose their titles. The first time around, the D'Angelo family, I mean, they had that, you know, months and months and months long story leading up to them winning the titles. And then I think it was their first title defense. They lost the titles. So I guess it'll be kind of nice to see if they're able to, pick up from where they left off with that story in a way. And, revitalize D'Angelo family a little bit. I mean, they've kind of felt more like background players the last, really since losing the title or the titles. I don't know. I'm more optimistic with the direction that D'Angelo family is going right now than I am with Chase U. But we'll see. We'll see what happens next week. Bruce, on our opener tonight.
I know I keep saying wrestling is better when it's relatable, but a match-fixing scandal in collegiate sports might be a little too relatable for people because of everything that it's just the history of that in college sports.
I just love the fact that I have no idea what's going on in collegiate sports. I well, literally have no idea that there's like another scandal going on outside of Chase University.
The scandals, I mean, it's tangential. They're accused of stealing signals by having an employee situated on the sidelines of other teams or watching their sidelines, okay, which is close to match fixing, but this is, and
I just
again,
call
going back
strategy.
To, there you go, and no one is denying that other people do it. So that's or other teams and other schools do it. It's just that they're going after Michigan because of how blatant it was. It seems like, and
yep.
I don't really care about college sports, so I don't pay too much attention. I just know because it's on ESPN so much, and I usually have it on mute. I just know it comes up a lot. But again, going back to the sports-like presentation, here we are, a match fixing scandal. So, yeah, the match itself, whatever, good opener, I guess, to a certain extent. Part of me, if the whole issue was just to get Chase Yu's scandal thing going on, then I guess the titles work, but they probably shouldn't have won it in the first place. And did they specifically state that the scandal was about winning the titles? I didn't catch that, so I heard you say it, but I'm not sure, and I just didn't hear that, so... Was that what they said?
I think so. I think that's
okay.
What they said.
If they said it's about winning the title, okay, cool. But it would be more realistic if there was adding onto that some kind of like improper benefits. And Booker T kind of brought that up on commentary, I think, too, about paying whoever, whatnot. So, which you can do now, but yeah, match fixing scandal, pro wrestling, how shocking. It's really meta if you think about it, the simulated sport having a match-fixing scandal. But okay, yeah, moving on.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess it kind of is, isn't it? all right, so that was those are our matches here tonight. Let's run through some segments here and run for the hills. So we'll start here. We'll start with the top of the show. So we showed it showed Lita making her picks for the Iron Survivor Challenge next week, and Kelly doesn't have it written down.
It was tonight. She made the picture tonight.
Oh, for tonight. Tonight. Okay, thank you. So that
and the qualifiers. Yeah.
Okay, cool. We also saw there was a Dom and Corbin backstage. We had the Supernova sessions with Metaphor. The tea ceremony again. I'm trying to read his handwriting. The tea ceremony.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know, but the report is really long, and he's got really short notes. So in my head, it makes more sense to look at the shorter thing to try and do bullet points. But maybe it is easier for me to look at his report. Here you talk about any of that stuff, and I'll pull up his report.
All right, I want to touch on Lyra Valkyria's ILE, because the first part where she's watching video, again, another sports-like thing where seeing people study film with their coaches. Okay, moving on. Tea ceremony. I like this because it really gave ILE time to speak and express herself, and I'm not sure how much of that we've really had while she's been in WWE, and just being able to hear her and assert herself and have confidence in her speaking and that character she's portraying, I think, was well done. It seemed a little disrespectful for Valkyria to reject the tea and the leaf from Xylee at the end.
I didn't really like that.
Yeah, and I'm hoping... I don't think Xylee's going to win, but I do hope that somehow plays a bit into the match and Xylee gets some kind of comeuppance on her. Maybe she gets in one of those stiff roundhouse kicks her own like black mass and Valkyria kicks out or she rolls out of the impact sends her out of the ring, something like that. But I thought that was a bit disrespectful from her, but I do like the setup. I like how Xia Li said it's tradition to wear this. It's tradition to go. I like how she walked her through the process because then it walked us through the process as a viewer as well. Now, of course, the acting and stuff wasn't top notch, but they really went out there. I think both of the women had confidence in themselves and what they were portraying. That does go a long way. And I do feel like this has been, to me, and I don't watch Raw and SmackDown every week. Yesterday was a rare day where I was able to watch Raw, only because where I work, when we have a holiday, except for what we call the Big Four, we take the holiday on a Monday. So I was able to actually stay home and watch it. You know, with the time difference and everything over here, it makes it more difficult. But presentation I've seen of Xia Li since she's been here, you know, the whole Tian Xia stuff is, I think, in a different category because that was a stable and it wasn't really focused on any individuals necessarily. But I think, again, just being able to hear her speak and express herself so fully and so thoroughly made me want to see her more than anything they've done in the past. I do think her entrance is a little still... just a bit too much in terms of the choreography, and I know what she's doing. I've seen that done before many times, but I think a little more simplicity would help her in her presentation moving forward. But I do really like how she came off tonight in this segment, and not so much with Valkyrie here.
Yeah, you know, I definitely want to talk about that segment, because I overall loved the segment. I thought that it was something different. I mean, we've never seen anything like that with Xia Li before. Yes, you know, with Tian Sha back in the day. You know, I say back in the day, it was what, a year ago, 2 years ago. But we've seen something like that. But as you said, it was a stable, wasn't necessarily focused on her. But you know, this tonight, I thought the set that they used looked great. You know, I mean, it was probably, you know, obviously in the performance center somewhere, but I mean, I think they made it look as good as they could. It just kind of, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, the respecting your ancestors, respecting your elders, and, you know, honor and things like that. I really liked the whole, you know, idea of the tea ceremony. And matter of fact, man, total side tangent, but I was down at a convention in Pennsylvania this weekend, and they had this tea stand with, like, some of the best tea I've ever had. And I was watching that segment tonight, and I was like, man, I just want more of that tea. Anyway. As I said, that was total side tangent. But yeah, you love the idea of the ceremony, and, you know, her trying to pay respect to her opponent, Xia Li, to pay respect to her opponent. It that doesn't come off heelish to me. I like that. What came off heelish to me was Lyra Valkyria, who is, you know, she follows, like, the Viking ways, you know, and the Norse ways and things like that. And there's a lot of, there's definitely some ceremony and things, you know, in that. Why wouldn't you respect the ceremony of another, you know, another warrior, you know? I don't know. It just, it didn't seem very babyface to me. It seemed very bratty. I didn't
especially
like
after
that.
Especially after Xia Li still gave her a deep bow after being shown that disrespect.
Exactly. That's actually exactly where I was going with that. At the very end, the deep bow from Xia Li, because, you know, right at the beginning of that segment, the Lyra didn't do quite a deep bow, but she, you know, explained to her that the deep bow is a sign of respect, and you know, she still got the deep bow at the end. Lyra, to her credit, did still give the deep bow, but the fact that she did not drink the tea, I mean, come on, what do you think? It's poison? Like, there's a camera in the room. Come on. You know, I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, the segment overall as a whole, loved it. Did not necessarily like the way that Lyra was kind of portrayed there. So, yeah. All right, now that I have Kelly's thing, the report here, the live report at pwtorch.com, cheap plug. Let's get back to it. So we also saw, I talked about that. Hank Tank, Briggs Jensen, Anofe Blade, Nathan Frazier, and Axiom were all backstage. Talking about the need for new number one contender for the tag team championship. Kariya and Garza showed up and kind of talked big. Tony D. Stacks and their cousin showed up. That's who that was. Did they have introduced that cousin before tonight?
Yes. I just forget her name. Whenever they had all those old folk in the family show with the tire irons and stuff, or the crowbars, she's been in some of the restaurant sandwiches with them too. I just don't remember what her name was.
Yeah, she looked like familiar, but like I couldn't quite place her, and they didn't do a good job of explaining who she was tonight.
During the match, Vic made one brief reference to the cousin being there. One brief reference.
Okay, yeah, and I must have missed that too. All right, then we also had we already talked about the Lyra Valkyria tea ceremony segment. We had Mackenzie Mitchell interviewing Bron Breakker. We kind of talked about this, actually, with Kevin's email earlier tonight. But Bron Breakker, Dijak stepped in, and they kind of talked about the inevitability of going to the Irish Survivor Challenge. Dijak said he's the one person that Bron can't break. And that's when Breakker said, something. He brought out that retribution line, which I thought was one of the lines of the night for sure.
Or well, maybe Dijak also said he's the one person that wants Breakker in that match.
Right, right. And break because he's the one person he can't break. We also had we'll have you talk about those and continue. That way I'm not throwing like a whole bunch at you.
I mean, there isn't too much, I think, more to add, except for since we're talking about Braun here, the whole reason they threw it at him was because of the whole asking about Von Wagner, and I'll just wait for you to get to that segment so I don't ruin it, actually. But the tag team segment in the back. So I do like the fact that showing these backstage viewing rooms for a while now, going back to the wasn't just the breakout tournament. What did they have? The Global Heritage Invitational. When they had that, they've been having these viewing rooms. And it is a small but easy way to quickly get people on TV who haven't been on in a while or don't have matches for that night, or even if they have matches for that night. So I do appreciate that, but I'm just not sure how effective it can be. So that segment with all the tag teams, and it at least gives you a reminder of who is in the tag team division right now, especially after, you know, the Creed brothers went up to Raw and are officially gone, right? Ivy Niles, too. So getting kind of a reset. Gallus is more on the periphery right now because Coffee was in the qualifier match tonight. They haven't really done anything. No one expects the Brawling Brutes to stay around too long, and I don't think they'll be tag team champion anyway, but I think at least it was a good way to get you a reminder of who was in the tag team division besides the people you saw tonight in the match and who to think to kind of remind yourself of. And this is also probably includes Gulak and Dempsey or Dempsey and Miles Bourne, but they could conceivably be thought of as another tag team within the division. And so the Braun Dijak thing, the retribution line was cute. It was delivered well. I just couldn't imagine when Breakker was a bad face, that he had so much more potential as a heel. It's just amazing how stark of a difference it has been. So, yeah. From there.
Yeah, no, I got to give him credit. I'm still not, I wouldn't say I'm a Braun Breakker fan yet. But he's getting me there. He's getting me there. And I, like I said earlier tonight, I think if he's able to, kind of put some more wit into his character, like, you know, like he did here tonight with the retribution line, I think that's going to do it for him. I think his in-ring work is about as good as it's going to get. I mean, I'm not trying to say it's bad by any stretch of imagination. But it's just, I don't know. It's very bland. However, you can totally be effective with the bland moveset, John Cena. Is what it is there. Hulk Hogan, too, for that matter. All right, let's keep moving on here. We had backstage Wesley ran into Ilya Dragunov. Lee sold being stunned as Ilya came around a corner. Lee said that he was back and had a lot of things on the agenda, starting with Baron Corbin. Ilya told Lee to have a piece of Corbin for him. Lee said that he had other things in mind as well, and the two shared a fist bump as Dragunov watched Lee walk away. We also had Corbin preparing near the lockers when Lexus King showed up. I think you kind of sort of touched on that, so we don't need to bring that up. We also had Joe Gacy giving another fiery promo on top of a building. He said that others might be reminded of other wrestlers when he shows up, but he's just him, and he's here. He moved his head, and behind him you could see the logo for the Performance Center on the building building below, and he tossed the camera off of the building. Like, I don't know if it was a phone or a GoPro or what, but whatever it was, he wound up just kind of tossing off the building and into the parking lot, and that's kind of how that segment ended. Then we had actually, you know what? I'm going to stop there because I want to kind of talk about Joe Gacy. I really like these. I you know, reading Kelly's report here, you know, this is actually what made me kind of say, you know, screw it, I'm going to talk about it. You know, it's like Kelly wrote in his report that it's baffling that Gacy has been saddled with all of this schism stuff when he's been capable of something like this. And I couldn't agree more. You know, the first promo like this he did was, I think, 2 weeks. It was the last time I was on the show. It was 2 weeks ago. I was on the show last week. And I forgot to talk about it. I didn't actually talk about it on the show. And that particular promo that night gave me, and this is a lofty comparison, but it kind of reminded me of the Kane Dewey promo. And like, I'm not saying it was as good as the Kane Dewey promo or anything like that. That's one of my favorite promos of all time. I was very surprised and pleasantly surprised with what he delivered in that promo. Same thing with here tonight. You know, it's some of it's a little bit cryptic and, you know, maybe not doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I don't think it's supposed to. But the fact that he's looking into the camera, you're directly into the camera, directly at you, into your eyes, into your soul, and kind of just going on these tangents, like it's so good. And you almost feel the mental break that he's having right now, you know, you're kind of losing his faction, losing his way and all of that. This is interesting. And I'm actually really, really curious to see what the direction for this character is. You know, he's not our, you know, I don't think he's either one of our favorites in the ring, but you know, he's certainly a decent hand in the ring, you know, for sure. So I think with a decent gimmick change for him, it could be a good, like good run. What do you think about Joe Gacy? And then whatever, the other few segments that I brought up.
So last week when you weren't on, Kelly and I were discussing the second vignette he gave. And I said the difference here is that when he was the leader of Schism, he had to be someone that tried to draw people in and put on this fake charisma. Here where he's by himself, he can actually channel the things that make a character.
Yeah.
That make the potential of the Schism character kind of more fulfilled here, because he doesn't have to try and saddle himself with having a message of recruiting people. And the thing that we also discussed last week, and there wasn't any, I didn't see her tonight, but it was the fact that Ava was shown walking into Shawn Michaels' office last week in the background of Daryl Sharma saying that the Braun Breaker Von Wagner match he was getting referee discretion of because of how intense the rivalry had been. So done a really good job of keeping us, at least me, intrigued with the two main members of Schism who are still in NXT, Joe Gacy with these vignettes, and Ava with being in the background. So we saw Paul Heyman talking to her. I'm pretty sure we saw Rhea Ripley in one backstage segment in the background talking to her. And then we saw her walking to Shawn Michaels' office. So I'm wondering what the next step is for her. Obviously, Gacy is making some kind of move in the singles division. It was interesting to me that right after the vignette, Vic Joseph was screaming, "We need it! Someone needs to get Joe Gacy off the roof, off the damn roof!" and trying to play it off like it was maybe a
live shot.
Well, that or something more deadly. So.
Oh, okay. I know.
Yeah, yeah. But again, interesting how they've been doing this. I think what we're going to see is Gacy probably at Deadline. That's what it's called. I see him probably jumping somebody to start a feud and then going from there. The only other segment I'll touch on that you brought up so far is the Wesley Ilya Dragunov thing, because most cases I am against a wrestler saying they're not coming for the main title, right? That's what Wesley said tonight. But not only did he have that list with people that he has issues with, and that list probably also still involves Carmelo Hayes and Chip Williams, everybody, but he was also so associated with the North American Championship, kind of like how they're discussing today that Noam Dar is so associated with the Heritage Cup. that it makes sense that he would want to get back what is kind of his baby, right? It's kind of like how Gunther right now, if he lost that title, it would make complete sense for him to want to get that title back rather than say that he wants to get the Universal Championship on SmackDown, right? Or is he on Raw? He's on Raw.
Yeah, he's on Raw.
The World Heavyweight Championship on Raw. So,
well, they're kind of telling that story right now with The Miz wanting to get the Intercontinental title from Gunther.
Because of how many times he's held it. Yeah, it'd be like if Chris Jericho came back and he said, I've held the title the most times, so that's my sort of thing. Cool. So I do understand that with Wesley, even though most times I do think that if you're not in here to get the main title, you're doing yourself a disservice. But, let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. Let's see. We had I thought you were going to continue. It sounded like you were on a roll, so like I hadn't quite scrolled down yet. All right. We also we saw a nice video package that kind of recapped the entire feud. Feud between Bron Breakker, Von Wagner, and Mr. Stone. But it was really kind of more of a recap of the relationship between Mr. Stone and Von Wagner, going back to showing them starting at the Performance Center 10 years ago. At least they were wearing T-shirts that said Performance Center 2013 on them. So I didn't realize they'd both been in the company quite that long. I knew they had been a while, but I didn't realize it was quite that long. But I thought this was a really well-produced vignette. They went through essentially the entire thing, from Von Wagner, sharing about his surgery as a kid and, to getting his skull broken back in by Bron Breakker and the steel steps. All the way up to the match last week between Wagner and Breakker. So I thought that was great. And even though the acting on Von Wagner's side is leaves a little be desired here, to say the least, a little. I'm still kind of invested in this angle. I would be more invested in the angle if Von Wagner was better with his acting. However, I think he's finding his stride. I will say, because later on there was another segment where it was actually directly after this segment. I apologize. Where he and Mr. Stone were watching the segment and talking about it and all of that. What did he send Mr. Stone away for? But he basically sent Mr. Stone out of the room to go get him something or something like that. But it was the way that he was saying it. It sounded like it was Cal Bloom saying it, not Von Wagner saying it.
Yeah, because there was something that we'd always say to someone, like, hey, no asparagus, though, right? No.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, that's right. No asparagus and his wife's meatballs or something like that. It still was bad acting. Like, don't get me wrong, it was still bad acting. But compared to the other acting we've seen him do, he just seemed a little bit more animated and a little bit more relaxed there. So I'm kind of hoping maybe he's figuring out. He's fallen into his own a bit, and plus two, this is. Isn't necessarily a fully heel character, so maybe he feels like he can have a little bit more fun with it. So, that, I guess that would kind of make sense. Let's see. I'll throw a couple more in there before I throw back to you. We had Mackenzie Mitchell with Eddie Thorpe Mackenzie Mitchell interviewing Eddie Thorpe backstage, talking potentially about him entering the Iron Survivor Challenge when Drew Gulak, Miles Bourne, Charlie Dempsey showed up. And Gulak said if Thorpe thinks he's going to make it, he's about as delusional as Joe Gacy. Dempsey said he's never known a failure because he's never fought a guy like them. Let's see. Andre Chase tried to talk to some reporters outside. We kind of talked about that, and JC Jane drove through and pulled him out of there. We saw Lyra Valkyria is going to defend against Xia Li. Yeah, so actually, I think we kind of made it through all of them. If you want to talk about Mr. Stone and then the Eddie Thorpe segment, and I think that should be about it.
I'll end with the Von Wagner stuff just so we can have some laughs, but. I want to touch on the Eddie Thorpe stuff real quick. So it had been a while since we saw him, so I like the fact that Mackenzie Mitchell addressed that right away. You know, why were you gone, so, you know, for a while? And he said, you know, I may have won the strap match against Dijak, but I was beat up and I had to go recover, not just physically, but mentally. And it's interesting because we've seen Dijak out here actually winning some matches and being involved in the Iron Survivor Challenge since then. So I do like they addressed that. When Dempsey Gulak and Bourne appeared, Dempsey said he's going to stretch Eddie Thorpe like he's never been stretched before. And you know, Eddie Thorpe said, oh, I've been stretched by some of the toughest men in the business, basically. And that's when Dempsey said, well, you haven't had failure yet because you haven't been stretched by me. Well, let's remember, Eddie Thorpe was trained in the New Japan Dojo. If he's been stretched by anyone, he's been stretched by the people who are going to stretch you the most, all right? So I don't think he has any fear of being threatened by anybody about being stretched because he went through probably the most hellish process in terms of learning the system, learning pro wrestling, learning the business that they have in New Japan. So I thought it was just kind of cheeky for them to do that there. And kind of, if you know Eddie Thorpe, if you know about his history, then you understand kind of why that line was there and his response. So there's that. And then we go to the Corbin, or not the Corbin, the Wagner. They're all so entangled, but the Corbin and, again, the Wagner and Mr. Stone stuff. So Kelly and I have been kind of saying, you know, maybe, just maybe, what they had been doing was trying to intentionally make these bad and have the humor come out even in these serious moments. And I think that's actually what they were doing, because I don't know if you've seen the episode, but the narration of this really reminded me of the South Park episode, I Never Should Have Gone Ziplining. And that over the top, or even like the Towley intervention episode, like just that kind of narration to me just, and how they were saying what they were saying, it just felt like it's supposed to be intentionally bad to make you laugh, even in these serious mm-hmm. moments. And I think tonight was probably the last piece of evidence I need to make that decision, because I just don't know how you can take all this seriously between these two, even though the moments have been serious. It's just if you had everything on mute and you were to look at it, oh, so touching, right? But then if you had the sound on for every single one of these segments, it's just too funny. That you can't help yourself but laugh. So I just feel like tonight, because I accepted it as an attempt at humor instead of actually good acting, I really enjoyed it just because it made Wagner seem more like a relatable person because of the whole, oh, your wife's the spaghetti and meatballs. Oh, I'm there. If she's making that, I'm always there. Hey, but tell her none of that asparagus. Sorry, no asparagus. Oh, I hate asparagus. I mean, I personally like asparagus. But, you know, it's understandable. Asparagus. It's relatable. And I think, and it's not something that we should definitely accept, like, oh, we should accept there to be bad acting and all that. But I think in this context, it finally clicked for me that they're intentionally trying to make it this way. And if you just accept it as such, then it's much more enjoyable than trying to nitpick it as we usually do because we analyze the show.
Oh, that was absolutely hilarious. I'm in my room sitting here, you know, quiet and everything. And my dad kind of rolls by in his wheelchair. And as I go, asparagus, and he just kind of looks like, the fuck?
Like, I failed as a parent.
Oh, that was hilarious. Anyway, well, with that F-bomb, that's going to bring us to the end of our show here tonight. Apologize for that. Sometimes they just slip out when it gets close to midnight. I am your host this evening, Nate Lindberg. You can check out what I do at natelindberg.com. And like I said, I was also on the post show last night with Wade Keller. So, you know, check that out in the PW Torch archives, or, well, whatever you want to call it, the feed, you know. Check that out. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Hazelwood. I'm @B_E253. My report for next week's show will be up as the show is airing. And I don't have anything to plug.
If you don't have anything to plug, I'm just going to say goodbye. Take care.
Bye.